KMCHD3 Detroit, KMPS HD3 Seattle, WBMX HD3 Boston,
and on AOL Radio
and Yahoo Launchcast.
CBS Radio's The New Sky.
This is Intuitive Soul and Friends with Lori Houston and some of the best co-hosts and fascinating topics of consciousness available. Shift Happens with channeler David Watson, Tracy McBurney's incredible energy consciousness, Mikhail Mir's financial consciousness, and nuclear physicist Thomas Campbell with quantum physics and consciousness. It's an incredible mix of the best teachers on consciousness on every show. Call Intuitive Soul and Friends now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
Good afternoon. This is Intuitive Soul and Friends. It is the last. I can't believe how quickly this month has gone by. This has been probably one of the busiest months, just energy-wise and busyness-wise. Anyway, I can't believe it's the last Friday of January, but it is. And so we have one of my favorite guests and co-hosts, which is Thomas Campbell. Tom can be found on the net at, he's written a trilogy of books called My Big Toe. So his website is mybigtoe.com, but it has hyphens in between. So it's my-big-toe.com. You can Google Tom on the web, and you will find YouTube station that has hours and hours of fascinating talks, interviews, workshops. You can get it all from Tom's site, and he definitely loves to connect and bridge science with spirituality. And of course, this show we talk more about ideas and how we sort of can evolve and move towards a state of love. But as always, Tom, I love to have you on the show, so thanks for joining us again.
Thank you, Lori. My pleasure to be here. It's always fun to chat with you.
I thought so. I mean, I like to think so. We're going to talk about New Year's resolutions. We've talked about a lot of different topics, and every once in a while, this kind of weaves into the topic that I like to bring up, and it's really about, I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that we can talk about, but how we, you know, mostly New Year's resolutions are just things we get disappointed about. But they're also, you know, I don't know what, we'll talk about this because, Tom, you seem to have an idea as to why we actually started New Year's resolutions. But, you know, mostly it's a list we think about very briefly, throw together. It's usually a very similar list to what other people have. And honestly, I believe that, you know, we can go through some of them, but I believe a lot of them are, again, a list of things that we have to do instead of be. And our motivation is that we're trying to fix ourselves and we're trying to change something outside of ourselves. And as we know, that doesn't work so well.
Yes, that is absolutely true. You know, the worst thing about New Year's resolutions are that usually from year to year, it's the same list.
Exactly. Exactly.
They don't change much. And that's because when you try to fix things from manipulating the outside stuff, you know, the things that you do, it doesn't really work. You know, even if it seems to work a little bit for a while, it generally doesn't work in the long term. So we don't make a lot of progress by changing behavior. Usually behavior isn't the problem, as you say. It's the cause of the behavior. Why do you behave that way? What's driving that behavior? That's the thing that you need to worry about, not the behavior itself. So that's true. So the New Year's resolution tends to be often something that just creates a disappointment or a failure sometime, or we just forget about it. Because it just doesn't seem to work, and then next year we try it again. It does seem like kind of an exercise in futility.
Yeah.
But I think the reason we did that originally, I think we got into this habit of New Year's resolutions, is because some longer time ago, it served as motivation. If you stood up in front of people and said, "These are the things I'm going to change in the new year. These are my goals for the new year," that kind of made you feel like you had to actually do it, because you stood up in public, you said it, And now if you don't do it, it kind of seems like you're a failure in public. You know, it's all right if you don't tell anybody, then nobody knows that you didn't do it. But once you announce it by writing it down on a list, then you kind of have a more of an obligation that your word is worth something. And if you said it, then by gosh, you'll do it. So that was, I think, some years back. That's the way we felt about things. So making a list was a way of kind of forcing ourselves to actually take some action. But then, as you say, action isn't the answer. So it doesn't really work very much. Instead of making a list of the things that you'd like to change, well, maybe I shouldn't say that. Making a list of the things you'd like to change about yourself is probably a good start. But don't stop there. Then go back to what is it that's causing those things? What's the fear? Where are the beliefs that cause that behavior? And then dealing with them. If you do that, you may not have to write that same thing down again the next year. You might actually make some progress on it.
It's interesting. I looked up top 10 New Year's resolutions, and I'm actually surprised that the top one is spend more time with family and friends, which is actually, you know, if anything were to assist with lowering our entropy, I would say that that would be something that would be a good thing, because it suggests us, you know, doing it for reasons of caring and sharing, although I'm not quite sure if that's actually what people are thinking. I think mostly they feel, you know, either that it's a should that they should be doing, or it's and I'm not sure, you know, what it is that they plan to do or what they're thinking when they actually put that down, whether they're actually going to follow through with it because they, you know, are workaholics or, you know, that's a fascinating one to me. I was quite surprised that mm-hmm. was actually number one.
Yeah, that is interesting. You know, what would they do? Is it because they feel that, you know, they need to spend more time with family so that they can kind of psych out where everybody is so they can more effectively manipulate things to be the way they want? You know, that could be that when they're unplugged from friends and family, then they no longer have control. They're kind of unplugged from their control and from their insider's view. So it may be that, or it may be, as you say, they just feel like, you know, sharing more of their life and being more intimate with, you know, the people around them. And that, I would agree, would learn to, you know, would lead to growth. That would be a good situation where they find other people to be valuable in their life, as opposed to just, you know, how can I manipulate these other people to make my life the way I want it? You know, that is not very profitable.
That is not. And I'm sure that no one actually thinks that in their mind consciously. But
of course not.
Yes, I do believe that that's probably a motivation, even though people may not understand it. Maybe we could talk about that a little bit more so that they don't think they're evil people, but to understand that, you know, we do try to manipulate and control others by wanting to know more details and information and, you know, analyzing everything and how it's going to fit into what our needs and wants are instead of what their needs and wants are.
Mm-hmm. Yes, most people are driven by their fears and by their beliefs. And they don't do, you know, they don't have those fears and beliefs in their intellect. It's not something that they are, you know, nefarious or I want to invite these people so I can learn things, you know, so that I can use them. You know, they don't feel like that. But they have a fear that if they don't know and if things are going on that they're not part of, then, you know, they may end up on the short end of that. You know, there may be a problem. They may not get their advice in where it's needed or steer it in a way that they think is best. Of course, what they think is best is generally what they think is best, you know, from their perspective, you know, for them. So they have these fears of being, excuse me, fears of being left out, fears of having things happen that are out of their control, fears of, can we say not being liked? You know, if you're out of sight, then maybe you're out of mind, you know, and nobody really cares about you and you're not thought of anymore. So fears of kind of disappearing socially or out of the minds of people, But all of those are all of those are normal fears that people have, and the fears that we have drive what we do. And for the average person, for most people, probably 80-90% of what they do is because of the fears they have and the beliefs that they have. You know, the other 5 or 10 or 15% is generally the stuff that's not important to them. You know, it's the trivial stuff. But most of the stuff they do that's really significant to them is fear and belief driven, and that kind of makes you a bit of a zombie. You see, instead of being the real you interacting with people from, you know, the deep core of your being and who and what you are, you're more of this person that's driven by these fears that you don't even know what they are. And that's the way most of us go through life. And that's why we have most of the problems that we have, is because these fears rule us. Like we mentioned on one other program, if you don't have the fear and the belief, then you don't have this secret subconscious that tends to rule what you do and think. You know, these ideas, these anger, the being upset just kind of pop out there. That's just the way I feel, and it's not necessarily rational. Well, it doesn't have to be. It's just the way I feel. Well, that's because you have a lot of stuff that's been swept under the rug, a lot that's kind of under the hood that doesn't show. And once you get rid of the fear and belief, that's not the case. You don't have this undercurrent that's pushing you and pulling you this way and that. You kind of are whole, and you are aware and happy with and enjoy your whole being and the way you interface with other people. So it really makes your life a whole lot better if you can get rid of this fear and belief undercurrent that tends to dominate your intents. It dominates what you think and how you feel and how you act.
It's really interesting because I've noticed a lot lately how people do manipulate others. And, you know, it's so subtle a lot of the times. And you know, it's sometimes as subtle as someone, you know, overly saying how much they love you, because they mm-hmm. think that if they do that, then, you know, you will, you know, that will make you somehow happy. Or, you know, they try to please you by doing something they think you're going to want, or they try to make you feel guilty, which mm-hmm. is a really good one. But that one's a little bit more overt that most people understand. But sometimes they try to make you feel guilty in a way that may not be so overt, but in a way that, you know, is just them just trying to get you to maybe even understand where they're coming from. But they do it in a way that, you know, we'll either try to bring around guilt, or it's trying to make you manipulate you to feel a certain way or to be a certain way around them. So it is fascinating how people use manipulation.
They do it all the time, and they like you say, it's not an intellectual thing. They don't say, "Oh, I need to manipulate this person to think this way, so I'll say this so that they'll think that." It's not going on at an intellectual level. But it's what dominates most of our lives. It's what defines us. It's basically who we are. You know, we have all kinds of, you know, these personality types that you'll read about in self-help books. You know, there's the savior that wants to fix everything. And there's the victim, you know, who is all woe is me. You know, life never gives them a break. And, you know, and so on. You've got all these various kinds of personality types. And, you know, it's telling that we type people's personality by the ways in which they try to manipulate, you know, other people. In other words, we type people by their beliefs and fears. You know, well, that tells us that that's what most people are. You know, they're this bundle of beliefs and fears, and they are kind of doing this dance of minimizing their own internal pain and anguish and fear and insecurity. Inadequacy, all those kinds of things are at the root of the pain, and they're trying to cover all those up, deny that they exist, make them feel better in this very intricate dance and, like you say, very subtle manipulation of their relationships with other people. And that's why they tend to live in soap operas. You know, when you live in a manipulated environment where everybody's trying to manipulate everybody else, that's a soap opera. And it's constant, you know, teeth gnashing, hands wringing. Oh, no, you know. It stays like that all the time. And as soon as one problem gets fixed, another one, you know, pops up. It's this constant trouble, you know, struggle, problems. And that's their life.
Yeah. We're going to go to our first break. You're listening to Intuitive Soul and Friends. I have Thomas Campbell with me today. He's with me every last Friday of the month. Tom can be found on the web at mybigtoe.com, but it's hyphens in between, so my-big-toe.com, or you can find him on YouTube. Google his name. You can even get a copy on Google of his trilogy of books called My Big Toe. We are on Sky Radio, powered by CBS.
Enlighten, empower, enrich. This is CBS Radio's The New Sky. New horizons, no boundaries. Radio's The New Sky.
Back to Intuitive Soul and Friends with Lori Houston. Call Lori now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Welcome back. This is Intuitive Soul and Friends. We have Thomas Campbell here today. I always love having Tom on the show, and I know you guys do too. And if you want to know more information about Tom, you can find him on the web at mybigtoe.com with hyphens in between. You can go to YouTube. He's got hours and hours and hours of fascinating conversations, workshops, all you could possibly want to know about spirituality and bridging science with it. It's there. So take advantage of all the wonderful gifts that Tom offers. So we're sort of talking about New Year's resolutions, and we ended the last one with the friends and family and how, you know, it is, relationships are probably the most important thing that we have and also the most important thing in our own growth. That's, that was the first one that I was surprised about. The next ones I'm not so surprised about. We kind of go into more the health related things. So we're either wanting to improve our fitness, and most of the times we're trying to improve our fitness with number three, which is losing weight. But it could be improving fitness because we want to tone, or we want to improve our cardiovascular because we are maybe having heart problems, or we're feeling really sluggish. So there could be other reasons that two is the fitness, three being weight loss, four being smoking, quit smoking, and I think five or six is, or no, not five, but six or seven is the quit drinking. So it's kind of a health theme for a little bit of the rest of it. And again, sometimes I wonder, you know, what our motivation is. Obviously, it's to try and change ourselves or to fix something that we feel isn't working. And sometimes it's out of pure terror, whether it's smoking because we know how bad smoking has become, or at least we've bought into what everybody's been telling us about smoking. And drinking, well, drinking and smoking, how it impacts our health. So I think there's the scare factor as well as the try to improvement factor. But health seems to be a major focus in our resolutions.
Well, one of those, you know, as you read those lists, the one thing that pulled those all together for me was they were mostly all about addiction.
Mm.
You know, the food is mostly about addiction. The weight, you know, we are a very overfed but undernourished population. And it's the idea that we need to lose weight usually doesn't work out so well for us, because we don't really understand that it's we shouldn't focus on the weight. The weight is not really the issue. We should focus on eating nutritiously, you know, eating
for health.
Yeah, eating for health, eating healthily, eating so you have a high nutrient to calorie ratio. And if we did that, the weight would take care of itself. But when we go out and we just attack the weight, but we still, you know, eat terribly as far as nutrition goes, then it's just not going to work. Because the way the body works is that if you feed it full of junk and it doesn't get the nutrition it needs, it says, feed me more. I need, you know, I don't have all the nutrition I need. You know, I'm hungry, feed me more. So you feed it more junk that's not nutritious, and it says, feed me more. I don't have all the nutrition I need. So if you have this overfed but undernourished syndrome that we're in, then it's not easily done just by going on a diet. Now, you can go on a diet. You can force yourself to eat less for a while. You can just put up with the hunger. You can only eat nothing but meat, or you can only eat nothing but fruit, or you can only, you know, eat once a day, or you can do these kinds of things, but they're not healthy either. You see, what people need to understand is nutrition. And if you understand nutrition, and if you say, okay, I'm not going to eat things that are junk, I'm going to eat, you know, nutritious food, then you will find out that once you have enough nutrition, your body doesn't want more. You don't have that hunger all the time, and your food choices get better and better, and guess what? All by itself, you lose weight. You feel better, and you're healthier. So that's, you know, the food is that we eat, a lot of the foods that we eat are addictive. We need them. We need them in the sense of their comfort foods, you know, that ice cream soda, you know, just makes us feel better. You know, well, it makes you feel better for a couple of reasons. It's got two addictive drugs in it that you're addicted to. One of them is going to be caffeine, if it's a soda, probably, and the other one is sugar. So, of course, it makes you feel better, you know, but it's a comfort food. And, well, I know we shouldn't eat that, and it's not healthy, but I really need one. You know, I want one, and that's addiction. And it's not just the caffeine and the sugar. Those are two addictive substances, but it's, you can get addicted. Your body can get addicted to a style of eating. In other words, if you eat way more carbohydrates and oil than your body wants or needs, your body will try to adjust to that because our bodies are adaptable. So your body adjusts to try to deal with all those extra carbohydrates and oil. And after your body has made the adjustment to deal with it, now you stop, then your body, you know, gets confused. It's you know, on plan B working to deal with this, and now you're not giving it that anymore. So when we actually try to eat nutritiously, we find out we feel worse for a while because it takes a while for your body to adapt to a something new. So that's kind of the definition of addiction. It's things that you do that then you feel bad or get sick if you try to stop doing them. You know, that's kind of the hallmark of addiction. And our whole eating style, we get addicted to. And it's, like I say, it's way overfed and way undernourished. And until we realize that, the losing weight, the cutting out the sweets, the, you know, not eating the junk food are all temporary stopgap measures that probably won't last long. You have to be committed enough to make a lifestyle change. You have to become smart enough to understand how nutrition works. And then you have to be strong enough to overcome the addictions to go back to the old ways of being.
Yeah, and I think also we have to look at, you know, the underlying emotional reason we're trying to either distract ourselves or comfort ourselves as well. So looking at the fears of why we're doing some of the things that we do to ourselves, to distract or to comfort.
Yes, well, that's true too. You know, you have lots of problems and issues in your soap opera, then sometimes focusing on food is one of those that doesn't pinch much.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's a great distraction if you're, you mm-hmm. know, if you don't want to deal with something. If, as soon as you start putting something in your mouth, your mind, your memories go to something else, right? They're not thinking about a problem per se. They're going off thinking about some memory that they had that, you know, you're invoking because of a smell or a taste or...
Yes. Yeah. It's emotional and mental filler as well as stomach filler.
Yeah. Exactly. And then there's, you know, the thing about, you know, if you're just dieting and you're not getting your body moving, that there could be, you know, there's, like, you know, putting it all together. But then we've got the other addictions, which is the smoking and the drinking that... you know, are much more, well, I don't know, maybe they're not any more harmful. The sugar addiction is a pretty bad one, and I don't think we realize.
Yeah, the sugar addiction and the caffeine addiction, along with, you know, the alcohol and the smoking, those are all, you know, very common addictions.
Yeah.
And the caffeine and sugar, I mean, we addict our children, you know, by the time they're, you know, 1 and 2 years old to sugar, and by the time they're 4, 5, or 6, you know, they're addicted to caffeine as well. Most of them are. And, you know, caffeine comes in chocolate as well as, you know, a lot of other things. But parents will often try to keep the drinks with caffeine in them away from their, you know, 3-year-olds. But by the time they're going off to school and going to other people's houses and so on, you kind of lose that battle. So,
Or even worse, they're giving them the sugar-free kind instead of the. I mean,
right.
I don't. Oh.
Yeah. If there's anything worse than sugar, it's the sugar substitutes.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah. It just.
Oh dear, it's quite a mess we've gotten our world into.
Yeah. Well, it's a, you know, our whole culture is so confused about the diet thing. We don't understand that. Even when we think we're eating well, you know, you talk to some people and they say, oh, I'm really nutrition conscious. I eat well. You know, I have, you know, I don't eat red meat. I have lots of pasta instead and so on. And, you know, they really are still, you know, nutrition starved, even though they think, according to the guidelines and the, you know, the food pyramid and what the government tells them and what their diet books tell them, they're still eating very, very poorly, and they think they're really doing well. Our culture is very backward when it comes to nutrition. We know so very little. We mainly form our opinions about what's good to eat from the marketing that's done by the people who are trying to sell us you know, their products.
I heard a horror story just this week, but we're going to go on a break, that apparently Coca-Cola is trying to get Coke put into a nutrition in the school or something.
Yes, and they're liable to be successful because, you know, Coca-Cola, these big companies, big international companies, have enough resources to buy pretty much any opinion that they want. You know, they can, what can we say, lobby congressmen. I was going to say bribe congressmen, but I guess that's not kind. But it's more or less the same thing. They can lobby Congress, and pretty soon it'll be a law requiring Coca-Cola, you know, to be served in schools.
In the school.
It's we have a problem with the, you know, nature's most perfect food. I was brought up to believe that that was milk. You know, well, it is nature's most perfect food for calves. It is not nature's most perfect food for people of any age. You know, it's just not. That's the, you know, that's the world we live in, that the marketers persuade us about what's good and not good to eat, and they get us addicted, and then they can make a lot of money on those addictions. You know, the tobacco industry did that for years and years and years. You get a lot of people addicted, you can make a lot of money from those addictions, and the food industry, you know, does the same thing, and we don't even know we're being had for the most part.
All right, we're going to go to break. You're listening to Intuitive Soul and Friends with Thomas Campbell. Find him on the web. Go to YouTube. Google his name. Everything's there. We're on Sky Radio, powered by CBS.
CBS Radio's The New Sky. New horizons. No boundaries. NewSkyRadio.com.
You know it ain't easy for these thoughts to leave me. There are no words to describe it in France or in England. 'Cause diamonds they fade, flowers they bloom, and I'm telling you these feelings won't go away. They even knocking me sideways. They even knocking me out there. Whenever you come around me, these feelings won't go away. They even knocking me sideways. I keep thinking in a moment that time will take them away, but these feelings won't go away. These feelings won't go away. It ain't easy for these thoughts to leave me. There are no words to describe it in France or in English. 'Cause diamonds they fade,
diamonds they fade,
flowers they bloom,
flowers they bloom.
I'm telling you, these feelings won't go away. They even knocking me sideways. They even knocking me out there. Ever you come around me, these feelings won't go away. They even knocking me sideways. I keep thinking in a moment that time will take them away. Won't go away. They've been knocking me sideways. I keep thinking in a moment that time will take them away. These feelings won't go away.
CBS Radio's The New Sky.
Back to Intuitive Soul and Friends with Lori Houston. Call Lori now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Welcome back. This is Intuitive Soul and Friends. We have Thomas Campbell here with us. Tom can be found on the web at mybigtoe.com, so my-big-toe.com. He has a lot of information out there, so Google his name and join in on all the forums that he has and his YouTube. Just take advantage of all the free information that Tom is offering for us. So we're talking about New Year's resolutions. We landed our last one on the addiction aspect. I thought we're going to end with one of the ones that's in the middle, but let's talk about the people that like to get out of debt, because I think that's a big one. I think that's one that a lot of people seem to think they need to set goals for, and it certainly is always coming from a place of fear, because it's called getting out of debt.
Well, like all the others, Lori, basically we have people who are focusing on symptoms and want to change the symptoms and ignoring, you know, the problem or the cause of the symptoms. And that's the case, when we were started earlier in this session, we were talking about people who, manipulate things and they don't really know why. You know, well, they're focused on what's happening, what they're doing, and who's doing what to them, and they're not focused on the underlying values, the underlying intents, what's happening at their being level as opposed to what's going on in their intellect. And that's really where the solution to all these problems are, whether it's the money or the weight or the friends and family. The real core here, the real solution space is inside of you, at your being level, at the core of you, your soul, if you want, your spiritual quality, the quality of your consciousness. We have all these ways of saying it. But that's really the fundamental thing going on here. It's not, we want to get our finances under control, and that's probably a good thing to say, but that means we have to get our spending under control, because mostly it's hard to get our income under control. You know, that maybe if you're self-employed, you have a strong interaction with how hard you work and therefore how much you earn. But for most of us who, go punch clocks and, get paid by the, either as professionals or whatever, but we go work 8 hours a day someplace and we have regular jobs, then it's hard to change your income a whole lot. Promotions come, but they're usually few and far between. That's not something you can say, well, this next year I'm going to get a promotion. That often doesn't work for most people. So what they're talking about there is that they need to control spending. And now we have the same thing with control eating, with controlling their drinking, with controlling their smoking, controlling their spending. It's not the intellect asserting control over the behavior is the shadow. That's what we see, but that's not the problem. If we get down into why we're spending, just like why we're eating, or why we, want to hang out with, our relatives more, we have to look at the inside of ourselves, down at the being level. We have to say, what's really going on here? What's driving this? Why do I, why do I spend this money and then regret it at the end of the year when all the bills come in? Why do I do that? And these things I just have to have. And we get new car fever. We start talking about it and thinking about it, and we get ourselves so wound up about it that there isn't anything that we'll do except to go out and get one. We just get, obsessed by it.
Well, they have all these sales out, Only if you get it now, you can get you can take a couple thousand dollars off. So if you get it now, it's a really good opportunity because they're selling it to you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, the people who sell things, particularly the big companies, are masters of manipulation. I mean, that's what marketing is about. How do you get people to give you their money for, what it is you give them in return? That's the whole idea. So they are very good at making us want to spend our money and making us believe that we need to spend that money, and that it's important to us to do that. It's, I guess we need to realize, the culture that we're in and start looking deeper into ourselves for why do I do this? You know, why can I be so manipulated by these advertisers? And I know everybody says, well, I know they manipulate others, but it doesn't work on me. You know, I'm not manipulated by that advertising, but everybody feels that way, and everybody is manipulated by that advertising in very subtle ways. It shifts your attitude toward things and things that you think are good or not so good. So it's we have to look inside. Why? Well, the one thing that enables someone to manipulate you, the main thing that allows someone to manipulate you is fear. You know, we might say guilt, but then guilt is just another expression of fear. You see, so it's the fear that allows us to be manipulated, and it's not just marketing and how we spend our money and how we eat, but it's how we vote as well. It has, we are manipulated by fear. And how do you stop being manipulated by fear? There's only one way, and it's not to outsmart the manipulators. And, they can't get me, because they get you in ways so subtle that you don't know you've been gotten. The way to do it is to get rid of the fear. That's the key to kind of being outside of this manipulation, whether it's political or financial or nutritional or whatever. You need to get rid of the fears by which you are easily manipulated.
Yeah. And I think, there's also this bit about the collective unconscious and how fear in the financial industry is being manipulated. So it's not just us feeling we need to buy new things, but also just this overlaying fear of, everything is in a difficult place. Everything is about struggle right now financially, and everybody's mm-hmm. struggling. So it kind of overlays a lot of people's consciousness and just in ways they're not aware of at all as well.
That's true. We are herd animals. We don't call that, we would call ourselves, tribal animals. But basically, we're herd animals. And the market responds to the attitudes and the feelings of the herd. When the herd is frightened, then we get one kind of market. That's the bear market, right? And when the herd is confident, we get the bull market. And it doesn't have a whole lot to do with economic fundamentals. Those factories making better products and they're doing it more efficiently. Yes, that matters in the details. But what matters more is just people's attitudes, people's sense of confidence or lack thereof is what makes the biggest difference in the economy. So if everybody's afraid, then everybody's kind of batting down the hatches and not doing much. They're just kind of waiting to see what happens. And in that kind of an environment, we have fewer jobs, we have fewer promotions, everything's tight, banks don't lend money very easily, et cetera, et cetera. When we're all, very confident that it's going to be a better day tomorrow and the day after that, then all that loosens up and the money flows. So our economy has a lot to do with our psychology, which has a lot to do with our fears and beliefs.
Yeah.
And is easily manipulated.
It's funny, when you talked about the banks, I don't know. I mean, it's possible that that's the way it is. And it's almost do the opposite as well. They want everybody to get more credit so that because they're afraid that if they don't have, so much money out, that like they need to get the money coming back in as well. So it's like they try to manipulate people by giving them more credit than they should actually have to keep them back in getting their money.
Right. Well, that's true. They want everybody to make a loan, right?
Yeah.
Everybody, but these are the small, unsecured loans.
Mm-hmm.
This
mm-hmm.
is not the loan that you have a mortgage on, where they have,
right.
where they hold your property, against your loan.
Yeah.
That's what I was referring to.
Yes.
The banks get very stingy. It gets very hard, house values go down. It gets very hard to get loans and this sort of thing in an economy where there's pessimism. But, always want you to go get a charge card, and run up a bill.
Exactly. It's, and again, all through manipulation. But that's where we're going to leave our last break. You're listening to Into His Soul and Friends. We have Thomas Campbell here with us. Do Google Tom. He's all over the web. Take advantage of his forums, which you can find on his website. There's a button up at the top. So My Big Toe, my-big-toe.com. Check out his forum because there's lots of information there. If you like to read instead of listen or watch, if you like to watch, then go to YouTube. All right, we are listening on Sky Radio, powered by CBS.
This is where the mind meets the soul. CBS Radio's The New Sky. NewSkyRadio.com.
So funny to be seeing you after so long, girl. And with the way you look, I understand that you were not impressed. But I heard you let that little friend of mine take off your party dress. I'm not gonna get too sentimental like those other stick of Valentine's, 'cause I don't know if you are loving somebody. I only know it isn't mine. Lying in the wedding cake, you used to hold him right in your hand. I bet it took all he could take. Sometimes I wish that I could stop you from talking when I hear the silly things that you say. I think somebody better put out the big light, 'cause I can't stand to see you this way. Allison, I know this world is killing you. Oh, Allison, my aim is true.
Radio's The New Sky.
Back to Intuitive Soul and Friends with Lori Houston. Call Lori now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Welcome back. This is Intuitive Soul and Friends. Today we have Tom Campbell. Tom is with us every last Friday of the month, and that means next month he will be with us. Oh, on the 22nd, that almost doesn't feel like it's the end of the month at all, but that's the last Friday.
CBS
yeah,
Radio,
you can find
the
Tom on the web at mybigtoe.com, so hyphens in between my-big-toe.com, or Google his name and go to YouTube as well. We've been talking about New Year's resolutions. Now, I was going to start with, you know, some of the other ones that are kind of enjoy life more and learn something new. But then I thought maybe we should just talk about, since we shouldn't be looking at them from a place of fear. And maybe, you know, part of these are actually things that are have a more positive twist to them. We need to focus instead of, you know, again, about fixing, changing. It's more about what we can do. Like, even if we looked at some of the ones at the beginning were about addiction, you know, shifting it around to, you know, having a healthier lifestyle or living a healthier, more energetic life or finding more balance in our life. If we can even sometimes shift it around so that it becomes more a being state and a place of love instead of being motivated through fear, I mean, that might work as well.
Well, yes, the problem is that people have a difficult time with that. You know, if you give them something concrete to do, like, you know, eat 5 bites less, you know, for every meal, you know, only eat half as many candy bars. Let's see, some of the other ones would be, you know, don't set a limit for your Christmas spending. You know, only one pack a day, you know, for your cigarettes. You know, if you make something concrete like that, people can set a goal and they feel like they know how to do that. Okay, I know how to do that. I have to decrease to one pack a day. And at the end of, you know, I'll have to ration. So I won't be able to have one every 10 minutes. I'll have to, you know, have one every, you know, every half hour, every 45 minutes or something like that. That they feel they can do with. But if you say, increase the quality of your consciousness, become love, you need to, you know, grow yourself spiritually. You need to get rid of your fear. And it's like, yeah, but, you know, tell me what to do, you know. Right. So people have this difficulty. If you don't give them something specific to do, which, of course, never solves the problem, then they just don't know how to approach the problem. And even if what you give them to do is something like, well, you know, whenever you feel uncomfortable or something negative, you know, look for the fear behind it. They generally don't like that because that's discomforting. You know, that doesn't feel good. You start looking for fears and pretty soon here you are, you know, in this swamp that you really just as soon avoid. And, you know, that's the swamp you've been sweeping under the rug and refusing to look at, you know, your whole life. And now somebody's telling you, no, go back there and take a really good look. And people just don't really want to do that. So they just don't ever quite get around to it. You know, they think it maybe sounds okay, but for some reason it just never happens. So the first thing, I think, if you're going to make a resolution, is to kind of get off the dime and actually make some changes at the core level of your being that will make you happier, that will make your life more fun. You know, talk about joy, that, you know, you'll learn something, but not just learn a fact. Learn something about who you are and why you do what you do and what makes you tick. And then do something as far as, you know, behavior, but only in the sense that, you know, that's the kind of the final step. That's the symptom. You can look at the symptoms, but find out the cause. That's more important. But it's a very difficult thing for people to get their head around. They hear about it. They probably hear you talking about it, you know, all week long about the things they need to do and the ways they need to grow. And if 5% of that sticks and actually causes somebody to grow, that's amazing. You know, that's wonderful because the other 95% has people's heads going up and down. Yeah, that makes good sense. But nothing really changes on the inside. So that's a problem that, you know, people like you and I who are trying to help people, that we need to deal with. You know, how do we really get through to people so that they have the courage to go make fundamental changes rather than just cosmetic changes in behavior?
Right. That was the hope. That was the whole focus of this show is, you know, we keep trying to make these cosmetic changes. We keep trying to do these things to, you know, fix or manipulate ourselves or others. And that's never going to make the change that we really want. That's never going to make us happy. It may make us happy for like a brief, you know, moment, but that's not really true happiness. That's, again, just, you know, something outside ourselves. It's not... It's giving the power, our power of happiness over to something or someone, which is never going to make us happy either.
No. So it has to start from a real deep commitment to make fundamental changes, not just these cosmetic changes. And until a person gets to that point where they, you know, want to do something about, they want their life to be happier, they want to have less negative feelings. They want to have, you know, they don't want to be victims. You know, they don't need to be saviors either. You know, they just would like to have a good, you know, happy, positive life and, you know, feel good, be good, that sort of thing. Until they really have a commitment to work on that, then the rest of it is mainly, the telling each other, oh, I'm okay, and you're okay, and we're all okay. We really don't have to do too much. Yeah, we'll make some resolutions, and we won't do much, but that's okay. We'll make them again next year. And, you know, we just kind of get lost in the humma-humma talk and listening and not really doing. So if there's a resolution to be made, it would be a resolution to get serious and not keep working on superficial systems or superficial symptoms, but rather to change self at a deep level. And first you have to understand, well, what kind of change? You know, what is it that I need to change? And here the symptoms might point some directions, but fixing the symptom won't fix the problem.
And that is the thing we really have to understand, is that the more we try to fix the symptom, the more it's just going to reappear either in another form or another way, because the undercore, the core value is, or the core belief is not being touched.
Yeah.
And it's really that we want to grow. I mean, we're all here wanting to do the same thing and wanting to do the right thing, whatever right means. But, you know, moving towards right action or, you know, doing things for the right reasons, it's just often we get so sidetracked by the symptoms or the, you know, the things we want to change and fix and manipulate about ourselves and others.
Yeah, I guess a good way to start is just to go inside, get acquainted with yourself. Get to know the real you. Don't be afraid that you don't really want to know the real you, because the real you is so inadequate and insecure and the rest of it. But to have the courage just to go find out who is the real you. Who are you if you get inside of the fears and the beliefs, get past all that junk, all the social stuff, all the cultural stuff. Who are you? And what are you? That would be like step number one, you know, a real thorough self-examination of the basic intents and motivations that you have going through life. You know, why do I feel that way? Why is it so important to me that things happen this way? And if you can succeed at that, then the rest of it becomes a whole lot easier. But that's the tough point to get by.
Yeah. It's just that one piece of, you know, and then, you know, finding that way to accept whatever it is that you see that's not be so critical to change and fix and manipulate.
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
The idea is not to cast blame. It's not that we're going inside to find who's really to blame for me being this way. You know, blame and guilt and all those things are all useless. They're worse than useless. It's finding the truth, dealing and accepting it, and then changing becomes a lot easier once you know who and what you are and how you want to change.
Well, I hope this has helped some people. I think there's been some really great ideas and thoughts offered. So, you know, really think about it the next time you're wanting to make this big list and look at why and find out, you know, from the inner core who you are. You've been listening to Intuitive Soul and Friends. Tom will be back with us February 22nd. It's always a pleasure to have you, Tom. I love having you on the show. Google his name, find out all the information you can find out about him, and thanks again, Tom.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Laurie.
We're on Sky Radio, powered by CBS.